Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey friends, welcome to the Tennis and Bagels podcast. I am your host, Andre, and I felt like I spoke a little bit like when Vunch does his intros this time. I don't know why, but maybe we're just spending way too much time together. Speaking of which, how are you guys doing?
Good, Andre. Happy to spend time with you always, and excited about the red clay. You know, this is a good part of the season, and you know, excited to talk about it and see what unfolds the next couple of months.
Yeah, great to be here again. Always fun doing these podcasts, and I'm also excited for the clay. Monte Carlo is just starting, so we didn't have that last year, and I'm really excited for this tournament. Just hope the rain cooperates.
Yeah, exactly. Like, most likely the most beautiful tournament in the whole calendar. And I think clay is like my favorite surface. I'm not sure if I'm biased because I'm from South America originally, so I grew up playing on those courts. But yeah, I think clay is definitely gets me most excited about, like, until grass comes on at least. What do you guys think?
Yeah, clay court tennis is quite fun to watch the players just construct the points, I think. And you see a lot of different kind of shot making and variety, and really it becomes about shot tolerance and consistency from the baseline, but also some really nice variety and good. And you really have to be physically strong and mentally tough, I think, to play well on clay, to be able to sustain a higher level. And just because the court is slow, you don't get the payoff necessarily from your ground strokes. And some players, you know, especially a lot of players, majority of the players live in Europe and they train in places like Monte Carlo in France, and they're adept at, you know, sliding and moving on the clay. And so that contrast becomes really fun to watch in these matchups, obviously. And then you have the king of clay, Rafael Nadal, who's always, you know, making history on the surface and has won, you know, around 92% of his matches in a 20-year career, which is just astounding. And so, you know, this part of the season is always, I think, memorable.
Yeah, I think you're saying earlier, right? So, like, one of the myths of clay court is that, like, well, you're saying that it's a myth that, like, clay court has, like, the longest rallies per match, I would say.
Yeah, the average rally length of clay court tennis versus grass and hard court tennis is actually not that different. So I think it speaks to more about the point construction that's required and the extra work that you need to generate pace on clay, which is just tougher because you don't, the ball just slows down and you have to, you know, play with more margin and topspin, but you also have to you know, move and get yourself in the right position. And so that extra bit of time, I think, helps a lot of players. And you can really wear your opponent down. But that's going to be through really good point construction. And, you know, that's why you see so many players who prefer the red clay and do very well in the South American hard court swing, but also places like Monte Carlo and Barcelona and this time of the year. And yeah, so it really, really rewards, I think, a lot of players on the tour.
Yeah, I think it has a big impact on movement as well, because clay is, so if we're comparing it to grass, even with the higher quality grass of recent times, bad bounces are way less frequent on clay. So it really promotes hanging back at the baseline, coming to net less often, more as a tactic of surprise than anything. And yeah, the ball sits up, so you can hang way behind the baseline, hit with heavy topspin, and the ball will fly really high up, as Nadal has demonstrated throughout his career. So I think also when surfaces change, it's important to look at how movement and positioning becomes optimal on different surfaces and not just speed or length of rallies.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess speaking from the perspective of somebody who's learned how to play on clay, like the first thing that they teach you is to be consistent from the back of the court. And it's like you always do drills, like that you have to do, like whatever, you need to do 10 shots before the point starts. So it's like, yeah, it's pretty brutal. And I think movement, in particular, I love sliding. And I think not being able to slide on hard courts is extremely detrimental to my game, like when I'm playing. Like, and I can only imagine this being like an extremely important factor for like players like who are great on clay. They move well on clay. It's like it's not as transferable as like hitting forehands, I guess. Like you can change some of the techniques, but sometimes like moving, it's not as obvious a thing that you would change on your game. Like you'd have to actually get to play matches and learn how to move on the surface. I feel like this is something that's important. And honestly, like in terms of a viewership, I just really love seeing the clay like on TV. Even if it was the blue clay, it was confusing because I thought it was a hard court when I glanced at it at first. But then we had the red clay is one of my favorite surfaces to look at. I'm still undecided to this day whether I prefer grass court or clay court. Maybe I just like the transition from one to the other, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned something that was interesting there, which is the you mentioned like a willingness to dig in, and something that reminded me of is like a lot of players say like you have to learn to suffer and dig in, and I think that really applies on clay. I remember watching this week a little bit of highlights there was a tournament in Marbella going on in ATP 250 this week, which had four of the semifinalists were all Spaniards. And Corina Busta just won the title, and he beat Jaume Munar in the final. But in his semifinal win over Ramos Vinolas, his countryman, he had he said in his interview afterwards, he said that I just love to suffer. I've learned how to suffer, and I think that's just a testament that the amount of pain tolerance and the amount of, you know, consistency and the way you kind of have to pace yourself on clay, I think is just, you know, if you're not a great mover on it, it becomes so much tougher. And so, yeah, I think that's why you see a lot of Spanish players especially doing well on the surface.
Yeah, and willingness to suffer is huge anywhere in tennis, but especially on clay. I think we talked about how the difference between clay and grass might not be as big as some people think, but on clay, the short points are not necessarily going to come in clumps. There will be lots of them, but you can't like serve your way through a set on clay. Yeah. And your opponent can make it much more difficult for you to win points by hanging way back behind the baseline, hitting neutralizing high balls. And so you really have to be prepared to hit 10, 15, 20 shots if you want to win a point sometimes. So it's really impressive, and I think scary for probably other players on the tour to hear Corina Busta say that he loves to suffer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially like when you think about players who love to attack and Some players have like some sort of like difficulty like understanding like where are they at in the rally. So like is this a neutral point in the rally? Is this a point where I can be aggressive? So a lot of them just tend to rush the net, and going to the net on clay, I think is probably of all the surfaces without a good opportunity on clay is probably the worst time like that you can have. Yeah. You probably get past like you mentioned like Karin Yubusta and Hamim Munar. I was saying like before the call that I was watching up some of the highlights and the match, and Munar was hanging like some like 3-4 meters behind the baseline, and he was passing Karin Yubusta. It's insane like to think that like you have the time and the space to do that on clay, like that wouldn't necessarily exist very well on other surfaces, either because the ball bounces a little lower, as would be the case in grass, or just because a little faster in general on other surfaces. Even though nowadays the surfaces speeds are very, very similar in a lot of ways, like it's not exactly as it used to be some like 30 years ago, but like regardless, I feel like clay still punishes you if you just think you can just go to the net like and win the point without anything to back you up. So
yeah, the finishing point, finishing point becomes so much tougher, doesn't it? Like
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the worst things you can do on clay is come to net behind a bad approach. I think on clay more than any other surface, you can have rallies in which like it's not entirely clear which player is ahead in the rally. And so I think sometimes players can get frustrated with that, lose their patience, and come to net. And the both tours as a whole are great at passing shots, in part due to racket technology, so they can find all the angles, and clay gives them time, even if they're way behind the baseline like Munar was in that final. So it's really important on clay, if you're going to come to net, do it in a surprising way or do it off a great approach, mm-hmm. because you will get passed if neither of those things happened.
Yeah.
Happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now that we have underway, because last week we had a couple of smaller tournaments. We had Charleston, which essentially just broke down in terms of draw. Barty and Muguruza, who had been doing incredibly well throughout the season, lost early. Barty lost early-ish, and Muguruza had to retire, and a lot of other players just also lost early, and we had a somewhat unexpected final. But I feel like this week we have at least two important events. Like, I mean, the women's events, like mostly important right now, would be the now called Billie Jean King Cup, which is still something that a lot of tennis fans need to like hammer in their heads a little bit, because the change is not necessarily quick to adapt. So even I myself, I have to kind of remember myself all the time that it's not called the Fed Cup anymore, but the Billie Jean King Cup. And we have the first Masters 1000 on clay of the year in an event that did not happen last year in Monte Carlo. And Novak Djokovic and Rafa Nadal are in it, and they're in opposite halves of the draw. They're not number one. Mm-hmm. They're numbers 1 and 3 seed, right?
Yes.
I was about to ask you. You forgot to mention the number 2 seed clay court artist, Daniil Medvedev. I can't believe you didn't mention that right off the bat.
Yeah. How could I forget? He's one of the biggest threats, no doubt, on clay, right?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Favorite for the French Open, I would say.
Yep.
Nobody can handle like those low balls, generate pace from the baseline.
Those high margin flat ground strokes. Yeah.
It would be the most Medvedev thing to just go from like 0-5 at the French Open and then just win the whole thing.
Like lose first round in all the lead ups and then win the French Open.
You would. Yeah. Can you imagine if he does that and like he does the shrug again at the final of the
French Open? Or the octopus? Yeah.
Holy crap! That would be something else. Then that would be the moment I would look at him and like, okay, now we got something special happening here. This isn't.
Yeah.
This is not normal.
The next gen has finally arrived.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like we always joked at the clay court artist. A comment by Cliff Drysdale from ESPN when he was making the predictions.
Sorry, Cliffy.
At the French Open last year, like before the draw. But it's kind of funny, like his clay court results, like if you take out the French Open, right? I mean, and you take out Madrid and Rome, his two best results on clay were 2019 and Monte Carlo, where he beat Stefanos Tsitsipas and then Novak Djokovic. Djokovic didn't play a great match, but still. Got to the semifinals, and then he's 5-1 up against Lajovic, and then loses that, and we have a Lajovic-Fanini final. And then he goes to Barcelona the very next week, and then beats Kei Nishikori in actually a really great three-set match, and then loses out, and then after that doesn't win a match the rest of the season, and then doesn't win a match last year. So
I think he got to a Barcelona final against Team as well, and he was up 3-0, and then he kind of got rolled after that.
I was just laughing at that, mentioning where he beat Nishikori, right, and then he lost to Team in the final. That's right.
And I was laughing at a takeout Roland Garros in Madrid and Rome, because those are like three of the biggest tournaments. But you are right. He does have some good wins to his name on clay. Okay. I'm probably a little bit too harsh on him, but it's not his best surface, to say the least.
I still don't understand. Maybe he just kind of had a bad season on clay and just couldn't win much, even though he has never won a match Roland Garros, right?
Right. Yeah. I guess last season must have been tougher because the turnaround was so quick and he went deep at the US Open and then he pretty much played like the next week. So I think that, and then also his draw didn't help. He got Fuksovic in the first round, which is a brutal draw for him. So I do think like he could,
except for Rublev.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I hope we never play again, is what Fuksovic said. Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Medvedev would probably rather play Rublev than Fuksovic on any sort.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, he did mention today that he hopes that the extra week after Rome and the French would give him some extra time to prepare. Because another interesting turn of events is that the French Open has actually moved its date by a week. And their explanation for that was that the vaccine rollout is a little bit slower here in France, and we want to make sure that we're ready and fully prepared and equipped to have fans back in the stadium. And it was kind of strange at first because I was like, okay, you're going to move it 1 week, but how does that really help the COVID situation? But then I guess they just want to have close to a full capacity stadium. But what it does do, and I think at least it wasn't like last year where they just took the decision unilaterally and didn't inform like the other majors and stuff. But this year, at least the other majors definitely knew about it, like the Wimbledon and US Open, and they all released statements. So that was good that, at least there was some unity in that sense. But then what it does do is that it affects the ATP and WTA tours, because the second week of the French Open is now probably going to be the first week of the grass court lead up events. And normally there's a 3 week gap since 2015 between the French Open and Wimbledon. Instead, this year it's 2 weeks. So now tournaments like Stuttgart and another 250 and some other WTA events are going to be hampered by this. And, honestly, they may not be able to have a turnout at all and probably will lose a lot of revenue. And so it'll just be interesting to see what players decide, and especially somebody like Roger Federer, will he actually now reconsider playing the French Open, because he's already not playing in Rome, as the entry list for that came out today, that he's not going to be playing in Rome, but then he's going to be playing in Madrid and most likely the French Open, but still not sure whether he'll actually do that or not if he goes second week, because then he's going to have to potentially play Halle the next week, and Halle is like kind of his place where he gets those matches in before Wimbledon.
Yeah.
So
and I think if the grass court season is going to get decimated, skipping Roland Garros could kind of give him a leg up on a lot of his competitors, who a lot of whom aren't great on grass. And if they're not going to be able to play lead ups, then him skipping Roland Garros and just playing one or even getting extra training time on the grass could be a huge advantage.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, because he would definitely. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, I don't want to get too dramatic, but I think if things continue like this for the grass court season, it's just a bit of a shame, because with the ATP, we can already see this huge divide with the next gen who are not developing into good grass court players. And I feel like if it continues to occupy this small of a part of a year, things just don't look great for its future. But sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's for about Roger Federer. It's not like he's going to lack match practice either, because he's most likely going to play Halle as well. So unless he actually retires for whatever reason, he's going to have enough. And he's more than used to playing on grass. And let's be honest, he's won like some like 7 or 8 Halle titles, and also 10. 8 Wimbledons. 9?
Oh, wow, 10.
Yeah,
10 Halle titles. 10? Oh, of course. And 8 Wimbledons. Yeah. So
yeah, like he would probably would be wanting to go for La Undecima as well, if you want to call it that, like Nadal did it at Halle. And
The tricky part about the Halle is that it's the week right after the French Open. So if you were to get to like a fourth round, a quarters or something like that, that surface change is going to be tough if he actually decides to, if he commits to the clay. That's why I'm...
Isn't it 2 weeks though? That's true. Halle got moved up a week because of the 3 week thing. Mm. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, normally because you have 3 weeks, right? Normally it's like Stuttgart and another tournament like Hirschenbosch or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you have Halle and Queens the second week. And then usually there's like Turkey or another event and then Wimbledon.
I wonder if they're just going to move like some of those tournaments down, which is not going to be great for like preparation for Wimbledon, but then you can still have the tournament. And at this part of the season, honestly, I'm going to tell you like this, not at this part of the season, but at this year in particular with where COVID is like just making everybody struggle. It's incredibly important that tournaments hold their tournaments, you know, because for a lot of the federations and things like that is their main source of revenue. And if they can have a tournament, they can just survive, especially if they already didn't have a tournament last year. Like going 2 years without one is going to be extremely brutal. So,
yeah. And I think Wimbledon was maybe the only one that had pandemic insurance. So for a lot of these tournaments, not happening a year could be crippling, like you said.
Exactly.
Yeah, those smaller tournaments you really worry about, like the 250s.
Absolutely,
Because they can't go 2 years in a row, getting canceled.
Yeah, the pandemic has really made me appreciate how sort of unfailing the tour is and, like, everything happening every year, because if it doesn't happen 1 year, like, it can really throw a wrench in everything. So I kind of failed to realize before how tenuous everything was, because it seems to happen with such consistency.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.